It's the wrap. It's the end of the week on the Pensacola Morning News when I invite a couple of friends here in studio with me to just kind of rap about the news of the week and end the week on a good note. And you know, it's kind of a free form, like if we were sitting down having beers, which I always think would be the better way to do this, or cups of coffee, which Andy Terhar has his cup of coffee, so good. Nicole Stacy has a, what is that? What is that drink?
It's always Starbucks.
It's a Starbucks something.
Always. They should be paying me at this point.
Why not? Why are they not?
You're an influencer. Let's talk about this.
All right. So Nicole Stacy, who also works with Visit Pensacola, and Andy Terhar, who, you have a job, right?
Yes. Part-time job.
Part-time job. All right, fair enough. All right, so actually, before we kind of get into the freeform stuff, I always like to ask Nicole when she's on, we're supposed to be in a recession right now.
Yes.
But are we seeing it from Visit Pensacola's perspective?
You know, we've had a really great year. We've already had 1.7 plus million visitors this year. So, you know, we've had a really great summer. Summer is still going. So I think it might tighten up a little bit as school starts and things start to level out. But in terms of the numbers and post-COVID, we're doing really well.
And it's one of those things where you tend to think there are certainly some people who are going to start making decisions like, I can't really spend that money on this. I have to buy gas, or I have to pay for clothes, or whatever. But at the same time, the folks who typically come here, you correct me if I'm wrong, aren't like just barely able to afford a family vacation. They're a little bit more affluent than that. And so maybe the folks that we get as visitors aren't as likely to have to make the trade-off or the option choice. Do I read it right?
Absolutely. And we're also seeing, even with the gas prices, a lot more people are driving. So we're still really honing in that we're a great drive market, no matter, you know, you live 3, 6, 7 hours away.
Yeah.
We're an easy place and a great beach to visit.
You know, one of the things that I want to talk about with you guys is we have this ongoing problem with finding people to work, right? Just like seems every field. The school board in Escambia County just made a decision to eliminate the smoking requirement for teachers, which I'm kind of a libertarian at heart, you know, and so I've never understood the idea of trying to tell people what they do in their lives, even from a health perspective, as a mandate for them working in a place. So from a liberty perspective, I kind of like this, but it strikes me as odd that the difference between having enough teachers or bus drivers or, I don't know, the folks who do the maintenance and whatever is going to be whether we prohibit smokers or not. Is that, I mean, what do you think about this choice? Is it a no-brainer to you, or?
I never understood why they had that restriction either. I mean, you know, the fact that somebody, you know, smokes a cigarette or dips tobacco, you know, how does that affect that they're a good teacher or not? I never understood that restriction. And you know, my wife's a teacher, and, you know, she's been a teacher for the last, I think, you know, 4 or 5 years, and it's hard to find teachers. And so why put even more restrictions on the people that you can get?
I mean, if the difference between, you know, let's say you had full employment, right? You weren't scrambling to get people. The difference between hiring this person and that person, let's say person A is a smoker but great at teaching, and person B is a non-smoker and good at teaching. Well, give me the great smoker. I mean, don't we want the best teachers
we can
get?
It's not like they're going to be smoking in the classroom.
You're right.
There's a big difference.
I mean, they do it in, you know, they go down the hall to the ladies' room or the men's room, obviously.
Yeah, exactly, with all the other kids smoking.
Yeah, right, but, you know, not in the classroom. I mean, it's going to be fine. On that same note, I'm kind of concerned about this. The recent announcement by Governor DeSantis that veterans and spouses apparently would be eligible to teach with a very low amount of training. I mean, it's like 12 hours or something. It's crazy. I was reading a post somebody had put on this who's a teacher. And look, you know, I love the military. I love the veterans. But that doesn't make you qualified to teach. It doesn't mean you know how to teach math or chemistry or phonetics or anything else. It's a weird thing to say that this one group of people gets free access to becoming teachers. Am I reading this wrong? What do you think?
I mean, there's a lot of jobs that are available. You said it earlier. So
yeah.
Why, when you haven't gone to the classes, gotten the education, and really focused in on how to teach a person,
right?
Are you going to go now be a teacher?
It's. I mean, look, I don't mind if somebody has a certification or they lack a certification, but they have an experience. You know, somebody in the military might know how to do a job, and the prohibition on them getting into that job in civilian life is that they don't have some certificate. Oh, fine. I understand that argument perfectly. I don't understand the argument that because somebody was in the military, therefore they're qualified to teach. I can't draw that line.
Right.
I don't see the line either, and I feel bad for the people who are, you know, in school right now trying to get their education degree or trying to move forward to some education so they can be a good teacher, and they sort of come along and they get a job, and then all of a sudden the classroom next door there's somebody who is a veteran but maybe can't do the job as well or doesn't have the training, and you know, it takes a lot of observation hours to get that training.
Right.
And I don't know 12 is enough.
Yeah, and somebody made a suggestion to me on the text line. They said maybe what we do is you create kind of a halfway threshold kind of thing where it's not job but a year of substitute teaching.
Sure.
And substitute teaching where you're thrown in a different class all the time and, you know, you really find out, do you want to do this or not? And are you able to do this well or not? Because obviously somebody who's going to be a substitute, you're already talking about, you know, the regular teacher is not there, the expectations of what you're going to be able to cover and your skill at doing it, they might be fabulous, but the expectation of that is not as high. And so that would seem to be, we kind of help the shortage of teachers because they're filling in when they need to as subs, but we're not depending upon them as primary instruction deliverers. I mean, that seems to make sense to me.
Well, and 9 times out of 10, the teacher has left the substitute
follow
what they're
the
going to be doing.
Exactly. 437-1620. You can always feel free to text me during the wrap if you've got suggestions about things that you want us to talk about or mull over. All right, we have a race for mayor in the city of Pensacola. And by the way, right now is like, you can't basically look down the street without finding somebody doing a debate or a forum or something. And I've hosted a couple of these for the Women for Responsible Legislation. Tuesday, there's going to be one at the Rex for the mayors. And you know, it's kind of funny. These folks have done 6, 7, 8, you know, at this point.
There's like 5 this week.
What's that?
I think there's like 5 this week.
Yeah. And I mean, it's literally every night. If you wanted to watch nothing but local political candidates wrangle, you know, that's the entertainment that you have available for you. Looking at the mayor's race, any thoughts on where you see this headed, Andy?
I'm very intrigued by it because there's 4 candidates and there's 2 of them that have a lot of experience, you know, Shayer Myers and Jewel Candlewin.
A lot of government city council experience.
Yes,
right,
government
right.
experience. And then there's DC who's a young guy and he's got a lot of business sense, which is just a completely different experience, but that's still viable for somebody who wants to run essentially a CEO of the city.
As an administrator, yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, that's the executive experience, right? Go ahead.
And then there's Steve Smith, who I've met on several occasions, seems like a nice guy, but as far as his experience, he's law enforcement and there's all kinds of stuff like that. But it's really, you know, it's a four person race. And I think that really, to me, and I'm just speaking as my opinion, you know, Jewel and DC have sort of separated themselves because I went to the candidate forum at the IPC the other night and Jewel was on target and had great points and was very, very, just really did a good job answering the questions.
Yeah.
And her
experience. And you were on council with her, right?
I was. And her experience really came through. And then DC had really good ideas, I think, for moving the city forward. And so, you know, there's going to be a good mayor. And again, if either one of them, I think, gets elected, they're going to be a really good benefit for the city.
Yeah, and same. I did not know Stephen Sharp until I was watching some of the debates, and you know, and seems like a decent guy, good, smart, qualified to do whatever. And of course, a lot of people get into being a mayor, and Ashton, yeah. did not have any great pedigree of experience either at legislating, government work, or at administration. Grover, exactly the opposite. A lot of experience as a legislator, but not really any experience as an administrator per se. I mean, as having been a commissioner. Thoughts, Nicole?
So I just think, like you said, there's been so many debates even just this week. This is the perfect opportunity for the community to get out and pay attention and vote for the person they think is actually going to make change. We do a lot of times complaining behind the screen. We all know that. So this is your time. This is your time to get out there and make an informed decision on who you want to run the city next.
Yeah, and next Tuesday, the P&J is going to do a mayoral forum. It's at the Rex. We're going to carry it on the radio at 6 o'clock. So it should be, it's going to be interesting. They're all very interesting. I tend to think we're very accustomed to asking like policy legislative type questions of all the candidates. And I really think from the presidential race to the governor's race to the mayor's race, we typically don't ask the right questions, which is, how do you decide when to fire somebody? How do you decide when somebody's not doing a good job? What do you, the stuff that the mayor or the governor or the president has to do is different than the stuff that a senator or a representative or a city council person has to do. And I just think we sometimes don't ask the right questions of these folks. News Radio 92.3, it's The Wrap. That means I got a couple of friends here in studio with me. In this case, it's Nicole Stacy and Andy Terhar. And somebody texted me, a good friend says, we were talking about the qualifications for being a teacher and the veterans and all this, and says, I can't believe a homeschool dad is, although I think in fairness, it's true, in my home we school, but it's my wife who has done the vast majority of that. I don't really deserve any credit for any of it. But anyway, I can't believe a homeschool dad is caught up with teaching credentials as if credentials guarantee good results. And it's a fair challenge.
Sure.
But sure. At the same time, I wouldn't want to just throw kind of anybody into the classroom. You know, even somebody who might want to homeschool, I want to allow people to homeschool their own kids without criteria, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everybody is eligible or qualified to jump in and be a teacher. And the challenge I have here is I don't get how being a veteran tips the switch over to making the difference. And I agree with the concern that just because you have credentials doesn't mean you're a good teacher. Raise your hand if you had bad teachers who were highly qualified and tenured. All of us, right? So I get that. We also got an interesting note in here. Somebody said, and I think we knew this, but the point that the reason they didn't want smokers is so that they could qualify for insurance plans.
Oh,
and
that makes
sense. I get the argument. I get the argument, but
you're still rolling out a class of people.
You still want the best teachers, yeah. And of course, that's a byproduct of this goofy system where you get insurance through the workplace. And I mean,
that's a whole nother Friday wrap that we could chat about.
That's exactly right. One of the things that I wanted to talk a little bit about, and especially because we have you here, Andy, you've worked under the new charter. Were you in office under the old charter also?
No,
the new charter. Okay, so the city council last night finalized the 5 charter amendments. They're so very boring. You know, we're gonna have to vote. Well, I won't. I don't live in the city, but city residents are gonna vote on them. Have you been following this conversation very much?
I knew there were some charter amendments that were going to be proposed. To be honest, I don't know what they are.
Okay, so I'm not going to take the time to explain all of them, but the only one on, there's actually 2 on here that are somewhat interesting. I think the 3 of them are very boring. They're very they make minor technical changes and don't do a lot. One of them would put the city council pay from being an amount that the city council decides to attaching it to a formula set by the state. The same kind of formula that they would use, for example, school board members or commission members. And there's different formulas for different size municipalities and the number of people on your. There's all kinds of factors in here. The way I understand it is it's going to be a fairly substantial raise for city council members. That's why Sherry Myers voted against it, because the numbers are not included on the ballot item. So they're just telling you they're putting it on a formula. So the kind of the 2 questions are, number 1, should we give city council a raise, substantial raise? And 2, should it be a formula that's set by the state rather than city council itself deciding?
Well, I think the interesting thing about city council pay is they're sort of stuck in the middle. You either pay them more and make it more of a full-time job to where you want that person to spend, you know, 90% of their time working on city issues. Or, to me, you leave it the way it is to where it's a part-time job and they get part-time pay. And I thought that the pay that we received when I was on council was appropriate because it covered the time that I spent working on council and also allowed me to have a day job. And that day job paid for the majority of my life.
How many hours a week did you spend as a city councilman?
Well, depending on if we had a meeting that week.
That's fair. Yeah, okay, so during meeting weeks, what would you say?
Meeting weeks, I would say it was between 15 to 17, 18 hours a week.
Okay, so about an hour out for every hour in, or maybe 2 hours out for every hour in, almost like a college class.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay,
yeah, I would say that.
And then on weeks when you weren't doing a meeting?
10, probably.
Okay.
I'd come into the office. If a citizen wanted to meet me at the office, I'd do that, or if I'd go meet with them, and I'd spend some time reading over next week's agenda, you know, things like that. So that was mostly about, I'd say, 10 hours.
See, probably. In my mind, and that's interesting, because I picture city council as being like every waking moment of your life. People are calling you, bothering you at the grocery store. Andy, fix my sidewalk. Andy, the neighbor's dog is pooping in my yard. Andy, you know, I mean, like, that's how I think of it, but you're saying it just wasn't that experience for you.
No, it was. And again, it depends on what you consider, you know, important items to look at or important items to work on. Or other words, I always took city council as it's my job when I have things to do. But there's other city councilors that would go out and be proactive and go do stuff. That's just not the way I saw it. I saw it was, I'm here to work on items that get put in front of me, and I'll work.
You're here to be a part-time legislator.
Pretty much, yes. All right. And when it was time to work, I'd work, and then when it was time to go do my job to actually, you know, pay for my food and shelter, I'd go do that.
Isn't it cold?
I mean, I think you have a point. If you're going to get paid more, then this should be considered more of a full-time job. I still think there's a lack of knowledge about all of the city council and what they do and who they are and where they're at. I mean, there are some that are very loud and make themselves known, and there are some
who
that,
do you mean Sherry Myers
that what? Don't you so you know, as a city resident, it would be interesting, because if it's part-time and I knew I could come meet with you, I wouldn't bother you in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. If it was full-time, then I would think, okay, he's there all the time. Mm-hmm. And now I know he's focused on it every single day, well, Monday through Friday, hopefully, and he's working on our behalf.
Go ahead, Randy.
What I was going to say was, I always told people this, that I compared being on city council like being the referee at a football game.
Okay.
If you don't ever talk about them, then they're doing their job, because they do what they do in the background. And so therefore, if people weren't complaining about me, then I think they were thinking I was doing a good job. Now, if I wasn't doing a good job, I think they'd complain about me. So I always felt like I was doing a good job, because I never got a lot of complaints. I got some people who didn't.
So you were trying to be like the sound engineers for the city council, the folks that you only notice when they goof it up.
Exactly.
And if nobody ever talks about them, perfect job.
Exactly.
All right.
That's the way I was.
Invisible
it.
City councilman. Yep. Because nothing's broken.
In the sense that I'm there. And yeah. If you want to reach out to me, you can. But I feel like I was doing a good job, because a lot of people didn't reach out to me that much, because
I got you.
It's potholes, yes. There's always potholes.
That's exactly right. Charter that's sort of interesting is the one that lowers the qualification criteria for mayor and city councilman, so that you would either have to they're going to drop the fee, you know, the filing fee, from 3% to 1.5% of your salary. Mm-hmm. And the other one drops the petitions either from 5% to 2.5% of the electors for city council, or from 2.5% to 1.25% for the mayor. I like both of these. It makes it easier for people to participate, and I would hate to think that a couple hundred bucks or a couple hundred signatures, which are hard to get, would be the difference between somebody being able to run or not being able to run for city council.
I mean, it's almost like the teacher thing. If you're a smoker or a not smoker, does that qualify you or not qualify you? So I think if you lessen, then it does allow for more opportunity.
And what is a couple hundred bucks, or your willingness to go bother strangers to ask them to sign a petition, which is different from campaigning and trying to persuade them,
sure,
right? You know, what does that have to do with being eligible to run for office?
No, I think the less barriers to less restrictions for people to be able to run is the better, because you need more people. Like, again, we have 4 people running for mayor. You know, sometimes I think who's District 4?
Jared Moore?
Jared Moore, yeah.
Okay.
Like, he's running unopposed, right?
Right.
Which, again, great for Jared, but you'd like to see more people trying to be on city council, and I think that's great.
I don't care how much I believe somebody is the right person for the job. I always want an election. Mm-hmm. You should always have an election. It keeps good people honest, and it keeps bad people out. I mean, you know, or at least theoretically, it's better than just walking into the office.
I have the distinction of saying I have never been elected to city council, because I ran unopposed 2 times. So I've never actually
been elected. Which follows in the vein of nobody's complaining, nobody bothers running against me, everything must be good. That's hilarious. All right, I hate to end on an angry note, but I am going to end on an angry note. The I-10 toll for the Mobile Bayway reconstruction, I see you fluttering your eyelashes at me. It's maddening. Like, why? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe disagree with me.
Have they ever driven to Mobile at 5 o'clock? And now you're going to add another reason to stop traffic.
Well, they say they're going to do it with the drive-through tolls, you know, toll by plate and the electronic, and it's going to be wider and bigger and faster and better, but shouldn't interstates be free? I thought interstates were supposed to be free.
I think they should be free.
Somebody's got to pay.
Why do we pay taxes?
Why does Alabama pay taxes? I guess that's the question. Guys, thanks so much for joining me. Nicole, Stacy, Andy Turhar, always a pleasure to have you guys in studio with me, and have a great weekend, folks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.